You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
Well, folks, tonight is the night after the day before Thanksgiving, I believe. And I've been working here at the console today, so I've got everything all messed up. If you'll bear with me, it was a rush to get on the air. And I had taped a broadcast for tonight, part of a series, and I've decided not to begin it tonight, but begin it tomorrow night, simply because I think it might be fun and important to talk tonight in person and take your calls and your questions concerning the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I know that this time of year, every year, all of us begin thinking about that event, especially those of us who lived through it and can remember it as if it were yesterday. And believe me, I can. And so I would like to take calls tonight. And I would like for you to limit your calls to one question or one comment quickly. And I mean quickly, folks. One question or one comment quickly. The subject is the assassination of John F. Kennedy. We will not discuss any other subject under any circumstances. And if you persist in attempting to do that, I'll just cut you off. So, you have fair warning, and you know what the subject is, and that's what we're going to stick to. Good evening. You're on the air. Well, apparently, whoever was calling couldn't stick it out. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Cooper.
Hello.
Yes. I was wanting to know, I studied several books on the Kennedy assassination. I know last year you did a good broadcast on it. And it's like you say, that so many people have taken you down the wrong beaten path. And it's true that there are evidence, there is evidence in the photos of the symbology of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, like Dealey Plaza, the streets of Dealey Plaza form the pyramid. And it's interesting how the Washington Monument sits, or there, not the Washington Monument, but there is an obelisk sitting at the base of Dealey Plaza. And isn't that big building
Take a deep breath and relax.
Okay. I'm kind of nervous because it's hard to get on the air. When you finally do, it kind of gets you speechless.
Well, we need you to get to your point because I want to take as many callers as I possibly can tonight.
Okay. What is the big building that sits on the, I believe, the east end of Dealey Plaza? It's right behind the obelisk and reflecting pole. It's a great big building that you showed in your Zapruder film.
That's the Dow Tex building, and that's where the police department was at that particular time. I don't know if it's still there or not. And in the parking garage that you can see in the face of that building is where Lee Harvey Oswald was shot. Everything happened in Dealey Plaza.
Right. It's real symbolic, and it's when you study the mysteries, it all kind of clicks into motion.
Yes, it does.
I'm going to get off here and let some more callers come in. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. The number, for those of you who may not know, it is 520-333-4578. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, Uncle.
Good.
I guess it's fairly obvious, but my theory has always been that Lyndon Johnson was right in the middle of the whole thing. Means, motive, and opportunity. I mean, he's not the guy that did it, but I mean, you know, he was in on the deal.
He probably was in on the deal, and nobody can say for sure, and I'm not making any accusations against Lyndon Johnson because I don't really know, and neither does anyone else. But he was a Freemason, highly degreed. He was a member of the Grand Lodge of Texas, which, by the way, is in Waco.
There's a scene in the one of the Godfather movies where they're down in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
I guess it was a scene where the younger guy that took over as the Godfather, I can't remember his name, was talking to Meyer Lansky. And Meyer Lansky was saying something about they had a straight shot into the White House. And I figured that had to be Lyndon Johnson.
Well, again, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't engage in...
it's just conjecture. So.
Yeah, I don't engage in conjecture.
Okay.
I don't have anything that points that direction, but it's not impossible.
All right, but it's something to look at anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good night.
Good night. 520-333-4578 is the number. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? I have two quick questions for you. Number one, the man with the Gitano supposedly had a clip. Nobody ever found the clip for the rifle. And the second question I have is on the Zapruder film that's released to the public, they show the side of Kennedy's head being blown out, not the front and not the back.
Well, that's not true either. We have a first-generation copy of the Zapruder film, the original film, on 35mm film in brilliant color, which we've transferred also to videotape. And the film has been stored in a safe place along with a D2 videotape copy and a regular VHS and Super VHS copy and a 1-inch copy. So we have these scattered all over the place in safe places. What it shows is that the film has been tampered with extensively. And what you think is the whole side of his head blown off is where they've literally scraped the emulsion off the film. You're not looking at Kennedy's head. You're looking at clear celluloid, light shining straight through.
Amazing. And what about the missing clip for Ben Carcano, I believe it is?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not an expert on the Mannlicher Carcano rifle. Nor have I ever personally seen one except in photographs. I know that some rifles of that era did not have a detachable clip. The clip was actually an integral part of the rifle, and the rounds were inserted from the top into the clip, and then by working the bolt, you could push a round into the chamber, and then when you pull the bolt back, that round would eject, and when you pushed it forward again, another round would move up and be pushed into the chamber. I do not know if that's the type of magazine the Mannlicher Carcano had or not.
That gives me something to research. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. And thank you for calling. Number is 520-333-4578 for those of you who don't know the number or may be new listeners. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello, Bill Cooper.
Hello.
Just a quick question for you. I have taken the opportunity to write to you and to get my copy of this Zapruder film, and anyone who doesn't take that opportunity is really fooling themselves, because it is a vastly different version in every way from what you were shown. I've even gone in to check 20 to 30 different documentaries on videotape that claim to show the Time Life video Zapruder film, and it pans away from certain portions, and you're seeing a very edited and chopped up version of it.
Yes, it's been very controlled. What the public has seen has been so controlled and so manipulated that what they think that they've seen something, they really haven't seen anything at all. Why don't you tell them? Did you get a copy of our Zapruder film?
Yes, I did.
Why don't
I
you
did.
Tell our listening audience what's on that?
All right,
that
what I had done was I'm slowly changing my position. I haven't heard an update as to your position regarding the driver shooting Kennedy, but what I did was I took it's an Avid video program that basically runs on a Macintosh, whereby you can input video frames in its entirety. It samples it and gives you the ability to do still frame analysis, and also to a certain extent, kind of down to the pixel, will help you see if any manipulation digitally has gone on. Whereas that wasn't the case. What was the case is that it's looking less and less like, it appears through the motions and choreography that the driver lifts his arm as if he's shooting Kennedy, but to say there's a gun is an entirely other matter, and to say that when you're seeing Kennedy's head, you'd be fooling yourself, because what you're actually looking at is exactly what you said. It's just a bright spot, as if sunlight is reflecting off of his head, which we know isn't the case, and it causes a great deal of confusion because they make a gaping wound in the back of the head towards the front, and that would obscure any possibility of really determining through the film the entry or exit of the bullet, and hence giving you the direction from which it came.
Right. What we did was take the film directly to videotape. The reason you didn't find any digital manipulation is because we didn't do any.
Yeah, exactly.
Our film copy is straight from the original Zapruder film. Cost us an awful lot of money, and some people risked their lives to do it. And we got it. And we put that film directly to videotape with no manipulation whatsoever. And it's very easy to tell that, by the way, folks, if you know anything about digital manipulation. In fact, you don't even have to know very much to spot where videotape or any kind of digital format has been manipulated. It's extremely easy to do.
Well, yeah, your tape passed the test of flying colors, but guess who's didn't?
Who's that?
Nova.
Oh, yeah.
WGBM in Boston evidently had done a Nova program. I think it's called Who Killed Kennedy? And I had contacted the producer of this tape directly in New York, and I had acquired a copy of his tape directly from a one-inch he had had onto Super VHS, and that kind of put the nails in the coffin as to my suspicions as to I don't know if he was responsible for it, but certainly what he was given had been fooled with differently than the physical scraping of emulsion is what I'm getting at.
Uh-huh.
The only other question I would have is, as I go here, can you tell me your current stance on the driver's role in this? And secondly, my copy is the first time. The first time I had a little trouble. Second time I wrote back, it's been running beautifully. But can I obtain that in Super VHS if I send you the proper amount again, plus a Super VHS tape? Do you have the capabilities to dub that on Super for me?
Absolutely. It's on Super VHS on our master, and we can dub it directly to Super VHS on if you send me a tape, sure.
Right.
In fact, we already did that for one person, but we can't do that all the time because, you know, that's labor and a lot of other things.
Right, it's a different process.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that, and I certainly appreciate you making the opportunity available to everybody to acquire that piece of history. And folks, you've got to take them up on it because it is an entirely different film from what you've been seeing. It is not the decrepit, ancient, practically colorless and virtually two-tone in most instances. It's not what you've been seeing. It is vibrant, it is alive with color, and it's run at its correct speed, which is another thing that will help you out a lot, as opposed to it whizzing across the screen in seconds when it's not very long in the first place, but it's around 38, 40 seconds. But we see it starting at the sign, and it runs maybe 5 seconds. That's what we've been fed.
Yeah, they've intentionally sped it up when they've shown it to the public so that you don't have time to really notice anything. But what we did on our Zapruder tape that we have...
is rotoscoping.
Yes, it's rotoscoping, and we first we show it at the normal speed, the regular speed that it was actually shot at, the way it's supposed to be, that you never see.
Yeah.
And every frame that's there, there's nothing missing whatsoever. The only part where you can see that it stopped and then started again was because Zapruder stopped it and started it again. It's nothing cut out there. That's where he took his finger off the trigger when the car started to go behind the sign, and then he started his camera up again. And then we rotoscope it, and then we do it in half speed, one quarter speed, one tenth speed, and then we do it frame by frame for you, and each frame is held for quite a long period of time so that you can really get a good look at it and study it. And if you have a good video of VCR, you can still frame it on yours if you have a forehead or, you know, a real, you have to have a good BCR to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And
a little shake on you and you're wasting your time.
Yeah. And then we show Dealey Plaza, everything in Dealey Plaza, and you'll be amazed what's there. By the way, the reason they took that little jog down Houston, from Maine to Houston, and then down Elm Street.
Triangulating.
Well, not only that, what they did was, as they took that 90-degree turn from Maine to Houston, that's the square, when they took the turn onto Elm, that represents the compass, it's a steeper angle, and then they're on Elm Street, which represents the grove and the tree where the messages are tacked in the old days. And that's where the sacrifice had to be performed, according to the rituals. And there's the reflecting pool and the obelisk and the triangle, the underpass going under the railroad overpass is the eye. And by the way, it's a triple eye because there's three roads going through there, which has other significance. It is incredible. And the pentagrams on the four sections of the the temple of the sun, it's all there, and it's very clear. And,
that's another thing, you kind of glossed over it, but I haven't had the opportunity to visit Dallas, Texas myself, and everyone else who's listening, not only do you get the Zapruder film, but this Masonic representation physically, not only geophysically, but by the structures they put there, roadways, obelisks, things like that, Bill's home video of the things you can't get to, you get to see. And so if you can't make it, get the tape. And if you want to stop sleeping on the Kennedy issue, because a lot of people think it's ancient history, but what happened there is representative of how they treat people that get in their way, much less how they'll treat you, which is of course the enemy, as opposed to someone in their circle who didn't pass the litmus test at some certain point.
Yeah. The most incredible thing, the thing that really surprised me, because I didn't know this until I went to Dealey Plaza myself, was the fact that on top of the obelisk in Dealey Plaza is the eternal flame, the same flame that's burning on top of Kennedy's grave. It's a mockery, and it is incredibly sobering when you stand there and you see these things, and if you understand the symbology and what it really means that you're looking at, and then you watch all these other people who are sheeple, in all actuality, moving through this religious landscape, this pagan temple, and not even understanding where they're at or what it all means, it's just mind-boggling. But anyway, I got to get some more callers in.
Understood.
Thank you very much for calling.
Take care, Bill.
And thank you for your comments. I didn't mean to keep anybody on that long, folks, and I don't want to do it again, but he had some comments to make that I thought were important that you all should hear. Good evening. You're on the air.
Bill.
Yes.
Yeah, I've listened to you for the last couple of years. I've got a couple of things that kind of disturb me, you know. All this semantic stuff about JFK, right?
Wait a minute. What do you mean, semantic stuff about JFK?
Well, I agree with you, what you're saying. I've been down to Dealey Plaza. I was on the U.S. Kennedy. I read about some fishy stuff he did, right?
Okay.
The thing I'm concerned about is why. I've heard left-wing and right-wing things, he should have been knocked out. The real reason is why. That, to me, is a big question.
Well, to understand why, first, if you understand who did it, it's not hard to figure out why. Number one, he was killed by the southern jurisdiction of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. It's a racist organization that up until recently never let anyone of color into any of their lodges, and even now, there are not very many lodges with anyone of color allowed as a member. Another segregated group is the B'nai B'rith, which is another offshoot of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, but it only allows Jews to be members. And not all Jews are members of B'nai B'rith. In fact, a very small percentage of Jews are members of B'nai B'rith.
Right.
They actually practice in their lodges, both the southern jurisdiction, the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, and B'nai B'rith, practice the ancient religion of Babylon.
Right.
And they believe that they are a superior race of people, and that their goal in this world is to rule over and direct the inferior races in their evolutionary development. And the races that cannot evolve properly to get rid of or enslave them. So anyway, Kennedy had actually begun the process of integration.
Right.
He had taken the nation on a course that these people long ago had decided would never happen. And of course,
do you think Kennedy understood Masonry?
No, Kennedy was a Catholic.
Well, did he know what he was up against? That's what I'm saying.
I'm sure that he did. This war between the Catholic Church and French Freemasonry, which represents socialism, and I shouldn't say the Catholic Church, the Vatican and French Freemasonry, which represents socialism, against the Zionism and British Freemasonry, which is the southern jurisdiction of Scottish Rite, has been going on for centuries.
Well, I was in the U.S. Navy, and I understood about some of this because I was trying to been drafted into this Masonry thing. But let me ask you another quick question, and a connotation is about, you're mentioning recently about the Apostle Paul, and you were mentioning about some kind of...
Now, whoa. We're sticking to the Kennedy assassination tonight.
Right.
See you later. 520-333-4578. Also, another way to put that is French Freemasonry and the Vatican is represented by the Knights of Malta. British Freemasonry and Zionism is represented by the Order of St. John of Jerusalem. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. How is Dealey Plaza, how's Dealey spelled?
D-E-A-L-Y.
Oh, okay, because I looked up Dealey in the encyclopedia, D-E-L-E, and that is a noun. It means a sign indicating that something is to be removed.
No, that's not it.
Okay.
It was a man. His name is spelled D-E-A-L-Y. There's a statue of him also in Dealey Plaza, which is also included with our Zapruder film.
Yeah, well, I just thought it was interesting that it was pronounced the same way, and it means to take out or delete something. So... That's all I had to say.
Well, that's interesting, but it doesn't apply.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
520-333-4578. The subject is the Kennedy assassination. Stick with it. If you don't, you're bye-bye. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, Mr. Cooper. On your video, towards the end, I understand you didn't have the narration on the video for a certain reason. Can you explain why?
Yes. I had put out several... documentaries on the Kennedy assassination, which included poor copies of the Zapruder film that I had taped off of television because it was the only thing I could get until we managed to find somebody that was bribable. And I had narrated it. I had my own footage of Dealey Plaza, which I had narrated and expounded upon the occult significance of Dealey Plaza and what all these things represented. And pointed out things in the Zapruder film that people needed to pay attention to. And I was accused of brainwashing the public and making them see what I wanted them to believe. And so this version has no narration whatever. If you're intelligent, you're going to see everything you need to see and nobody needs to tell it to you. If you're not, even if I pointed it out, you probably wouldn't understand it. So this way, nobody can accuse me of warping your mind or brainwashing you or making you see something that I want you to believe or anything like that. You have to understand, I have to be extremely careful because I'm exposing some very powerful people, and they use every effort, they go to extreme effort to try to discredit me and everything that I do. So that's why.
Good point. One more question. Behind the fence, there's some people behind the fence looking in a manhole cover. And what is the significance of that position there for the assassination? Is there?
There isn't any. It was just a place where an assassin could have been. But there were innocent bystanders standing on that overpass who didn't see anything and didn't see anybody in that manhole or, anywhere along that fence. If there were shots coming from the front that did not come from inside the car, I believe that they may have been expert riflemen with high-powered rifles and scopes lying on top of the railroad cars, because you'll remember, as soon as the assassination took place, a train pulled out of that train yard and nobody followed it.
Oh, geez.
And if they had silencers on their rifles, it would have been a very easy thing to do. We also know that somebody lit and set off a string of firecrackers behind the picket fence on the grassy knoll. There was not a rifleman on the grassy knoll ever.
Oh, boy. Then what made him grab his neck then?
what made him grab his neck?
Yeah.
He was shot through the neck.
From a different direction.
Either from behind or from in front. I don't know which. I suspect it was from in front.
I see. Okay, well, thank you for your time, sir.
And the reason I suspect that is because the position on his back where they say the bullet wound was is below the point where his back was against the seat. And the only other wound that could have inflicted the throat wound was in the front of the throat. So I believe that he was shot in the throat from the front. We know that he was shot in the head from the front as he was turning to his left to speak to Jacqueline. A bullet hit him in the right front temple area and exploded. It was an exploding bullet. There's no doubt about that. When you put the film on an extreme blow-up and look at the back of the head, there's no wound to the back of his head whatsoever. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, Bill!
Yes, you don't have to scream. I know this is Paul, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, what can I do for you?
Bill, I have a question for you.
Sure.
I've always wondered when I watched your film over and over again, why did Jacqueline pick Kennedy up? When he was shot in the throat, he leaned down. And then she lifted him back up, and then his head got shot.
Well, he didn't, first, she didn't pick him up, and he didn't lean down. He fell over to his left onto her shoulder.
I see.
And she probably panicked.
I see.
And she probably pushed him up, trying to figure out what was wrong. She had enough good sense to be really looking and trying to find out what was wrong with him. That's clearly evident in the film. But that's what she did.
I see. And recently on television, I wish I had caught it, they said that there was new evidence of Kennedy being assassinated by someone from a manhole cover. Do you know anything about this at all? Or?
Baloney. Total baloney.
That film clearly shows the shooter.
Pardon?
Your film very clearly shows the driver as being the shooter.
No, it shows that the driver may have been the shooter.
Mm-hmm.
In the old versions, before we got this actual 35mm copy right off the original,
yes.
It looked like the driver had turned around and shot Kennedy. And I saw in documents when I was with Naval Intelligence that the driver did shoot Kennedy. But when you actually examine the film under high magnification, you can see that the emulsion has been scraped off in areas where if the driver had a gun, there is nothing there to see. There's no emulsion on the film.
Yeah.
Period. It's been scraped away.
Yeah.
Portions of the action in the front seat has been removed,
yeah.
completely off of the film. The film, even though it doesn't say who actually shot Kennedy, it does prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that there's extensive manipulation with the film, which means, beyond any shadow of a doubt, there was a conspiracy. Whoever tampered with the film was a part of the conspiracy. It also shows that Robert Groden, has been lying to the American public for all of these years. He is a phony, he is a fraud, he is a liar. We have also found that he has direct ties to the Israeli Mossad and the Central Intelligence Agency. I have also challenged to debate him on the true analysis of the film in front of any public audience. He bring his copy and I bring mine, and we'll let the public decide who's telling the truth and who's not.
You had your film magnified in Japan, didn't you?
No. No, we went to Dallas, Texas to a lab called, what was the name of that lab? I can't remember it, but it's an excellent lab that deals with film and videotape.
That was done back in 1990, wasn't it?
No, it was done in 1992, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about your film now, looking back in time about it?
What do I feel about it? The copy we have is the best in existence that the public can get their hands on.
Mm-hmm. I think it's excellent myself.
It's the best there is.
I think it's excellent, and I'm very glad that somebody turned the tide to the old Nolan Hill.
Yeah, nobody fired anything from the grassy knoll. If you know anything about rifles, especially high-powered rifles, and trying to find a target and hit it through a scope, and if you understand the extremely short range between that picket fence and where Kennedy was hit all three times, in fact, no marksman of any kind whatsoever, even an amateur, would ever choose that as a spot to shoot from to assassinate anyone.
Now, there's a name that I'm trying to catch, and I can't...
Paul, I got to let you go. You've been on way too long.
Good to talk to you, Bill.
Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
520-333-4578. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, Bill.
Yes.
I was wondering, did you happen to see a program on Discovery Channel a couple months ago? It was called Inside the Secret Service.
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, they interviewed the agent that was supposedly riding on the back of the limo when Kennedy was shot.
Well, that would be interesting because Agent Hill was extremely disturbed by what happened and had to leave the Secret Service was under psychiatric care for quite a while.
I don't even remember if that was the guy's name or not, but the man who was the agent...
was Hill.
Okay.
He was, in fact, assigned to Jacqueline Kennedy.
Okay, he claims that the reason she crawled over the back of the car was to retrieve a part of John Kennedy's...
Baloney. That's a blatant lie.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'll call him a liar to his face. We have the film. You can see everything on the back deck of the car. There's nothing there.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely nothing. You can blow it up. With any means that you want to, there's nothing there. She doesn't get anything. She doesn't go after anything. There is nothing on the back deck lid of that car except antennas and handholds that are supposed to be there.
So what's the possibility? She was trying to get away from the driver then? Who?
Either she was trying to get away from the assassin who was in the automobile,
yeah,
which there's an extreme possibility that that's exactly what happened. Or she just panicked and was just trying to get away from the blood and the gore and the horror of it all.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the way it struck me.
But she wasn't picking anything up off the back deck of that automobile.
I don't think too many people would be riding in an open-air car and see their spouse get their brains blown out and then crawl over the back of the car to try to retrieve a piece of that. That just struck me as pretty strange, so...
Well, it strikes me as she was trying to get away from the assassin.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. So, okay, I just wanted to check that by you there. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Number is 520-333-4578. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill. Dave in Albuquerque.
Hi, Dave.
Just the other day, I heard, I think it was the day before yesterday, and I was sort of listening out of one ear to the television, and they said that either a government agency or a news agency is asking anybody who still has personal film or video of the Kennedy, or it wouldn't be video, or movies of the Kennedy assassination that they took live on the spot, to come forward with it. So if anybody in your audience who has suicidal tendencies wants to turn that into the government, they can just feel free to do that.
If you want to make sure nobody ever sees it again, go ahead, give it to the government.
Yeah, right.
Our CBS, our Time Warner, our NBC, our Bob Groden, or any of these.
right, or ever wants to see you again, for that matter.
Yeah.
Considering some of the people who disappeared. Well, that's all I have for you.
Okay.
Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Bye.
520-333-4578 is the number, folks. Good evening, you're on the air.
Mr. Cooper, the wounds, I understand some of the wounds were surgically inflicted, and this involved the changing of the caskets. Is there any photographic evidence to the fact that Kennedy's body left Dallas in one casket and arrived in Washington in another? And is there photographic evidence regarding the surgical alteration of the wounds?
Well, I can tell you this. There is a strong possibility that the body that was photographed with the wounds may not have been actually John F. Kennedy's body. Now, I don't know if that's a fact or not. But the fact is that the wounds described by the doctors in Parkland Hospital are not the wounds that showed up in the government photographs of the autopsy. And if that is true, then the photographs of the body that was autopsied, or the body that they say was autopsied, could not have been John F. Kennedy.
All right. What about the casket? Was that, am I hallucinating there? Was there not a report that his body left Dallas in one casket and arrived in Washington in another?
Well, that is a possibility. Can't be absolutely proven, but there are witnesses and there is evidence that say that that is what happened. And we know sometime during that process his brain disappeared also.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
We're having a party, dancing to the music played by the DJ on the radio. On the table, me and my baby, we're out here on the floor. So, Mr. DJ, keep on like a friend, 'cause I'm having such a good time dancing with my baby. Everybody's swinging.
Oh, yeah. Remember that? That's right from that time. Sam Cooke was big when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Cooper?
Yes.
Yes. As complicated as this ritual sounds, it almost confirms a story that I had heard back then that Kennedy knew that he had some sort of disease, cancer of the brain or the kidneys or something, and he had arranged this whole thing himself. Have you ever heard anything like that?
Nope. Never.
That's off the wall.
Well, I don't know if it's off the wall or not. Have you got any substantiating evidence?
No, just my uncle mentioned it to me, and he's sort of involved in groups like that, and that he knew that he was going to die. He only had a few more weeks or months to live, and so he arranged this whole ritual for himself. And the whole thing was done from the inside by him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I had never considered that at all.
Well, as complex as this ritual is, it almost seems as though he had to be a part of it.
Well, I wouldn't bet on that. You see, presidents don't make decisions about what routes they take or what car they ride in or what time they're going to get somewhere or anything. It's all done by other people. Everybody thinks the president is so powerful and makes all these decisions. The president takes recommendations from other people and puts them into action. Very seldom does a president ever make his own decisions about anything.
Listen, it's an excellent show.
Thank you.
Okay, later.
President is a figurehead, ladies and gentlemen. He's indebted to the powers and the money and the people who put him in office. Good evening. You're on the air.
William Cooper?
Yes.
This is Helix 27, Detroit Militia. And my question is, how would you, could you elaborate a little bit on the youth who testified that he actually saw the shooter on the back of the grassy knoll who broke down the firearm and tossed it to someone on the railroad who put it in his tool bag and took off?
He's a liar.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. There was no shooter on the grassy knoll, period. Somebody set off a string of firecrackers. The expended firecracker residue was found. It was duly noted. There was nobody back there with a rifle who broke down anything and went anywhere. All these people keep coming out of the woodwork. I don't know whether it's to gain fame and fortune or whether they're part of the group and are just doing these things to keep confusing the issue. That's the fact of the matter. There was no badge man standing on the grassy knoll. You give me a photograph of a tree that's a black and white photograph that has a lot of light and shadow, and I can draw you a picture of anything you want. Dragons, lions, pterodactyls, cavemen, policemen, badges, torches, rifles, whatever you want, I can do it.
Well, I thank you very much for your answer, and thank you for being here every night for us.
You're welcome. And if you're ever in Dealey Plaza, take a rifle, or don't take a rifle. Somebody's liable to shoot you. Take a rifle scope, okay? A regular rifle scope, and take it up there behind that picket fence and try and locate a car coming down Elm Street in that scope and pick out somebody in that scope and imagine yourself with a rifle trying to load around into the chamber. Just find your target as it comes down that street and then fire. And also you'll notice that there are signs and trees and bushes and everything in the way, just like they were on that day long, long ago. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? Recently I've been working on Wall Street during the late 80s, early 90s. And one thing I noticed that when George Bush or Reagan ever came into Wall Street to talk to the stock exchange or anything, they started welding all the sewer plates shut. And I thought it was kind of curious since some of the callers were calling in talking about sewer plates.
Well, they can talk about sewer plates all they want. Take a look at the Zapruder film. You'll see where Kennedy was sitting. He wasn't sitting toward the side of the car. He was sitting more like toward in the middle, and Jackie was on the left side of the car. And even if someone had been in the sewer and had managed to move the manhole cover away and not been noticed by all of those hundreds of people who were standing on the side of the road, he still wouldn't have been able to shoot Kennedy. And you can see exactly when the bullet hits Kennedy. It's in the upper right front portion of his right temple.
The second question is, how do will you acquire this film?
Pardon?
How can I get a copy of this film?
Send us $40. It's postpaid. Make your check or money order payable to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. And by the way, the purpose of this broadcast was not to sell this film. I didn't even know we were going to have that caller. But if you want a copy, this is how you get it. Send it to the Intelligence Service, P.O. Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901.
Great. Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. 520-333-4578 is the number. Yeah, I'd like to see somebody down in a manhole in the street, even if he could get the top off without being seen, have a clear shot at Kennedy's head and his throat and supposedly where he was hit in the back. It didn't happen, ladies and gentlemen. These are deceptions. They are meant to steer you away from ever discovering the truth. And if you use your common sense and really look at these things carefully, you'll see that most of it's total bullshit. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Bill.
Yes.
This is Lex Jenkins in Fort Worth. Listen, I really appreciate your work and all the stuff that you do. I just got my copy of the issue of Veritas in record time. I just could not believe it.
You got it in one day?
No, not quite that quick. It was about three business days.
We just mailed them out yesterday.
I got issue number 7. Is that the most current?
No, we just mailed out issue number 8 yesterday.
Well, I also enclosed some extra money back issues. I guess that's what was sent out to me. I got
issue. Oh, okay.
4, 5, and 7. I sure would like to get a copy of 6, but I'll call the office next week. The only part of the whole thing that I can really understand is the most tangible thing is the car cannibal. I think the term Mannlicher has kind of thrown a lot of people off because they associate that with the fine quality German guns. And actually, the only thing that was Mannlicher about it was the copy of the magazine.
Yeah.
And the clip was a separate part. It's a what's called an end block clip, similar to the M1 Garand.
Uh-huh.
It's larger than a stripper clip. And it could be removed, at least according to some of the information I've got on old weapons, could be removed after loading the clips. I mean, after loading the cartridges into the magazine. There's a string attached, and you can simply just pull the end block clip right up out of the way.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So they used, so they wouldn't get lost during the heat of battle.
Uh-huh.
And
one thing I do know from reading the comments of experts about that particular rifle is that it was not any kind of a superior rifle at all.
No, it's typically capable of only about 3 or 4 minutes of angle, which is like a 3 or 4 inch group at best at 100 yards.
Uh-huh.
And you add to that the necessity of putting on a scope, and it was a crude scope. You know, it was really what we would nowadays call a telescope. It wasn't a rifle.
Yeah. Well, I do know about scopes.
Yeah, and it had to be offset because of the safety. The typical Mauser or other type of bolt-action military rifle had a big safety lever that was typically called a flag because when it was on safe, it blocked your vision of the sight. So the combination of those factors plus the downward angle, you know, shooting at a at an angle even from way up high or down low tends to throw the bullet, generally speaking, over the target that you're aiming at.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at Oswald's service record, and he was not a very... You know, not a particularly good marksman. To me, that's always been the big flaw in the lone gunman theory.
Oh, there's so many flaws that you can pick a lot of. There's no way Oswald shot. Besides that, we have a photograph of Lee Harvey Oswald standing in the door of the Texas Book Depository building when the motorcade is passing by.
Yeah.
They say it's somebody else. It's not. It's Lee Harvey Oswald. He's wearing the exact same clothes he was wearing when he was arrested.
Yeah. Him or not, I would give him one lucky hit at best.
Yeah. Well, it's him standing in front of the doorway. We did body measurement proportion comparison analysis on it. It's him. It is not anybody else. It's not this guy Lovelady or Lovelace, whom I have yet to ever see a photograph of or ever find any evidence that there really was ever anybody by that name.
What about the infamous Oswald double?
Well, there was evidently a double, and I'm going to tell you something else.
What's that?
There may have been as many as three McVeighs in Oklahoma City.
You know, I've heard different rumors about that. Of course, everybody's contradicting everyone else's story.
No, there absolutely was two.
Uh-huh.
Possibly three.
That's interesting. Do you know of any independent tests of the rifle done by a gunsmith to determine not just its condition, but did anyone actually shoot that thing for groups from the same relative height just to see if it was possible?
No.
I've never read anything like that either. I just thought it might
be. No one ever has.
I was also glad to hear your comment regarding the film. The only thing that I've ever been able to tell from the Zapruder film or any of the others is one, Kennedy was shot, and two, he's dead.
Oh, that film tells a big story. Also, one of the taillights, the stoplights, is opaqued on the original film.
Ah. I'll have to look more carefully. I've seen several of the films, but until just recently when I read your book. And
until you look at the one that we have, you're wasting your time with all this other stuff.
Uh-huh.
It's junk.
Yeah.
And I'm not telling you that to get our film. I'm telling you that because it's true.
Okay. Well, I tend to agree with your statement regarding Grassy Knoll, because I think that all those shapes and shadows have just become sort of a Rorschach test for people who want to see something that's...
That's exactly what it is.
There.
Yeah. And I can take that...
God bless you. God bless your family, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you. And you too. I can take that same photograph of that same tree on the grassy knoll, and I can draw you all kinds of pictures. It's amazing what people have tried to make out was on that grassy knoll that was never there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Okay. Honored to speak with you, Mr. Cooper.
Yes.
From personal experience and knowledge, I first heard that Sam Giancana believed that he was involved, or at least was bragging that he was involved in the assassination in December of 1963. I heard this from the son of one of his attorneys. And it seems, and I'm trying to reconcile everything, that it seems like in this plot that they actually convinced other people that they were involved in some way.
Well, in the underworld, that would have been a big big thing to brag about. Ooh, we bumped off the president, and we're still walking around. That's the kind of mentality these people have. But let me tell you the truth about that particular portion of the underworld. Way back in the 1800s, Albert Pike and Giuseppe Mazzini were communicating with each other. Giuseppe Mazzini took a street gang of young men and turned them into a branch of the Illuminati, which is an offshoot of the same Illuminati that was controlled by Albert Pike in this country, Giuseppe Mazzini in Italy, and others in other countries in Europe. And I could go off and name a whole bunch of people. But the point is that particular group became what is known as the Sicilian Mafia. The Sicilian Mafia is a branch of the same mystery religion that's practiced in the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, in the Knights of Malta, in the inner recesses of the Vatican. There is no difference between them, and they have this common link of the Brotherhood. So it is very possible that the underworld was mixed up in this, but if they were, it was as members of the Brotherhood and nothing to do with the crime world.
One other thing. You say exploding bullet. Is that like a mercury bullet or something? Or?
I have no idea how it works. I know that exploding bullets were developed by the Central Intelligence Agency and other intelligence organizations of many countries. The Central Intelligence Agency developed an exploding bullet that contained shellfish toxin. And I believe that that's why Kennedy's brain disappeared. In fact, I saw documents while I was in Naval Intelligence that if his brain had not disappeared, the shellfish toxin would have been detected by a good pathologist and would have given away the source of the bullet. You see, the intelligence community, ladies and gentlemen, is controlled by the Brotherhood. The only reason that I was able to get into Naval Intelligence because I checked that I was a Freemason on my on the forms that I had to fill out for my security clearance. And everybody that I worked with was a member of the Masonic Lodge, the Mormon Church, the Knights of Malta, or the Rosencross.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't a CIA brat like some people on the Internet claim that they are. But most of my friends were when I was growing up because the Vietnam Project was housed at Michigan State University. And a lot of those friends of mine who were children of high CIA officials, and I never really thought of it until just when you were talking, also belonged to DMLA. So there's a connection there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's passed from father to son. You'll notice that sons of people who do this work go into that work. Also, ladies and gentlemen, there's an excellent book out there that shows the connection between the major Ivy League universities, the intelligence community, and the secret societies. It's called Cloak and Gown. There's another one called The Wise Men. If you'll do any research into Wild Bill Donovan, you'll find that he and everybody who was in the original OSS were all Knights Templars, every single one of them.
Yeah, I heard a lot of bragging when I was a kid, and I didn't believe.
Yeah, well, I got to let you go. Got to let somebody else get in here before we got to go off the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
520-333-4578 is the number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Mr. Cooper, I am very glad to get through to you, finally. First off, I just want to say thank you for everything you have put on your radio show. I have been educated very much by you over the last year. I don't have any comments to make about the JFK assassination, and I'm really kind of surprised that I got through it all, so pardon me while I deal with the shock. What I wanted to contact you about, actually, is the Constitution Party.
Sorry, I told you guys. If you've been listening to me for a year, you ought to know I'm a man of my word. I said we're going to talk about Kennedy and his assassination, and that's what we're going to talk about, period. 520-333-4578 is the number, and we've got enough time maybe for two or three more calls. If you want to get your call in, good evening, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Cooper.
Yes. Turn off your radio.
It's off.
Okay.
I cannot afford to buy the tape, and I respect your opinions. And I'd like to know where the people were, in your opinion, were standing, and how many of them were at the time of the shooting. I've never had a clear understanding.
Where what people were standing?
The people that shot Mr. Kennedy.
I believe that the head wound was administered by the driver of the automobile, a Secret Service agent named William Greer.
And were there any other?
I believe there were other wounds. In the film, you can clearly see a bullet hit the chrome on the right side of the windshield of the car. You can see chrome and glass falling off to the right side of the automobile. It was also clearly stated by people on the scene that they saw that the windshield was broken on the right-hand side. And I believe that there were probably at least one, possibly two shooters on top of a railroad boxcar that was connected to the train that left the railroad yard at the same time that the assassination occurred.
Thank you very much for your information.
You're welcome.
You do an incredible job. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. I think that they probably used high-powered rifles with very good scopes and silencers on the rifles. As soon as the assassination occurred, that train pulled out of the train yard and nobody ever went after it or checked it or stopped it or anything. And that's where I believe the shooters were that weren't in the automobile. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Cooper. Do you think that executive order that Kennedy had authorizing the printing of United States notes had anything to do with the assassination?
I've read that executive order over and over and over again. And I don't read in that executive order what everybody else seems to think that it has. Have you read it?
I've read it, and it's only authorizes the printing of U.S. notes which were not interest-bearing, is what I understand.
Well, U.S. notes does not mean that it would not be interest-bearing. All it does is authorize the printing of United States notes.
So you don't see that this had anything to do with removing the interest that would normally go to the Federal Reserve?
No, I think Kennedy was doing two things that really made these people angry. One, he was messing with the money that was going to go to Israel. And number two, he was integrating America, which were two things that these people, B'nai B'rith and the southern jurisdiction of Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, were not going to allow to happen. You notice that the way they countered it was as soon as Johnson got into office, he created the Great Society and made these people slaves again by addicting them to welfare.
Okay, I see. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. If it hadn't been for welfare, the steps that Kennedy took to set the black man free in this country may have worked and may have possibly set him free. But he turned around and bowed to his own human frailty and accepted the handouts of Big Brother and became a slave again. Welfare, drug addiction, all of these things are a form of euphemistic slavery. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Bill Cooper. I realize we have a short time, but a quick question. Have you ever published any of the Algin's photo body size proportion results as to it being Lee Harvey Oswald standing in the book depository vestibule?
No.
Oh, okay. Has anyone done anything similar?
In fact, I haven't published anything on the Kennedy assassination at all. I don't know if anybody else has done anything similar or not. Unless you were in a law enforcement agency that does this kind of work and was connected with the people who actually do that kind of work, are an intelligence organization that does that type of work, you wouldn't even know about it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I learned it when I was with the Office of Naval Intelligence and on the briefing team of the Admiral Clary.
Understood. And I heard something about a video you had made, assassin, unmasking an assassin or something like that. Is that available to the people still?
Or
is
it no.
Oh, okay. And,
no, that's the one where I did the narration and everybody accused me of manipulating what people saw, so I don't do that.
No. Oh, is that why there's no sound on the that film?
That's why.
Oh, hey, good thinking. The only thing I'd like to do is I've been trying to get through for the few years I've been listening.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're out of time.
Oh, could I just offer my my address quick to listeners so we can pen pal?
I'll tell you, let's do it another night because we're being cut off a short wave right now.
Okay, sir.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and God bless you all.
Bring your sweet love, bring it all home to me.